This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, and you can follow my bunny Oreo at Oreo Smorio the Bunny on Instagram as well. He's got like, I think he's up to 2 million followers or something like that. Every time I say that, Sue thinks I'm serious. It's not quite that much. Joe Warmington, who writes for the Toronto Sun, and he's quite the character. I love Joe. We've been having him on as a guest for many, many years, reacting to some of the things that happened between the United States and Canada. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. I have an amazing audio cut of the day coming up a little later. But look, I've admitted that the tariff issue, well, two things. I'm not an expert on tariffs, and I'm a little uncomfortable about the impact that this could have to the American people. Blake Hurst is back with us this afternoon. He is a farmer, a corn, soybean, greenhouse farmer in Tarkio, Missouri. He's long been a spokesperson on a lot of these issues. And Blake, how are you this afternoon? Look, it's a complicated time, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's been kind of a long day as we've dealt with the fallout from the imposition of the tariffs.
So what are your thoughts here? I mean, genuinely, I'm deferring to a lot of experts on this stuff because my livelihood is not at stake here. But obviously, we all go to the grocery store. We see what's happened with egg prices. That's maybe a little different because of the bird flu. But just on the tariff issue, how could this potentially shake out for Missouri farmers or farmers in the Midwest?
Well, when I opened my email this morning, we have a greenhouse business. Spang and Moss is almost all produced up in Canada. We have a truckload of potting soil, which is mostly Spang and Moss, coming next week, and the price just went up $1,750. So that was my introduction to the day.
That doesn't sound like a good introduction, does it?
Yeah. And during the course of a year, we'll get five or six loads. So that's about a $10,000 hit to our bottom line. And, of course, you know, on corn, we've seen about a 50-cent drop in corn prices in the last 2 weeks. Now, obviously, commodity prices are affected by a lot of different things. But you have to wonder if this precipitous drop wasn't caused by tariffs on two of our three biggest customers. Actually, three of our biggest customers. I mean, it's like it was aimed at farmers. So yeah, there's got to be a little concern for those of us that depend on export markets for corn, soybeans, wheat, and also import things from other countries as well.
Well, Blake, a lot of people who supported and voted for President Trump, I'm sure, are in rural areas across the country, certainly in Missouri, and then are farmers. So there's going to be, I think, some pause given to some of these actions. Is there any thought right now, and I don't know where else you could go, but if you try to think this as potentially a positive, to say, okay, we know there's negotiations going on. There's threats. They're playing some politics right now. This will settle down and maybe work itself out a little bit, or is that naive?
You know, I haven't the slightest idea. It was interesting. The salesman, the broker that sells us the potting soil this morning said, well, a lot of people are saying this won't last but 2 weeks. We can hold your potting soil. And we went out and counted up our inventory, and we decided we had to have it. We didn't have a choice.
Okay.
So Canada treats dairy farmers in the U.S. pretty poorly. I mean, there's a lot of import restrictions from our dairy going into Canada. So in 2 weeks, we get a deal that lets us sell a little bit more milk and cheese to Canada. Well, then it will have been worth the short-term
right.
pain.
Right, and to me, it seems like that's probably the goal here, right? Because it's hard for me to believe that the president and the administration want to hurt American farmers. They're looking to make things on an equal playing field. At least that's the way it's been pitched.
Well, I sure hope so.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of us hope so. Look, there's, you know, when criticism is warranted for policies, I'm certainly not afraid to do that, but I think I'm taking a bit of a wait-and-see approach right now. What would you say about the other issue that's affecting prices right now with the bird flu? We all love our eggs. We go to the grocery store, and sometimes the shelves aren't full. You got prices that we're not used to, certainly in California, out west. I've been in Las Vegas. They're even higher out there. How's that affecting folks in the Midwest, and how do we get a handle on that, Blake?
Well, it's a real problem. The USDA just announced $1 billion to try to fight bird flu. We have a vaccine, but there's two problems. One is we can't put vaccinated products into international markets because you can't tell the difference between a bird or a meat that's been vaccinated or a bird that has bird flu. So that's a concern. And the other reason is just sort of a practical thing. You know, chickens are grown in big barns. There's tens of thousands of chickens in a barn. And right now we have to give each individual chicken a shot. So that's extraordinarily expensive. And those people that are giving the medicine can actually be a vector for the disease as well. So until we figure out how to get this disease into feed or water, it's going to be a real challenge for poultry producers.
So what you said there caught my attention, and maybe people know this. Every chicken makes sense. They have to be individually given the vaccine.
Yeah, they have to get shot just like you do when you get the flu vaccine. Well, you can imagine how stressful that is on chickens, how stressful it is on the guy trying to catch them, and how much it costs. So right now, and of course, we're worried about the trade effects of vaccinated poultry. So right now, we're working to get a vaccine that can be given some other way, and also talk to our trading partners and see if there's a way we can work this out.
What would be the other way? Would it be something that could be ingested in food or something along those lines?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah,
if you could put it, yeah. And I my assumption is there's a heck of a lot of research going on that very issue. And the other thing we can do. This is spread by geese, by ducks. We're going to have to get a lot better biosecurity. In other words, just sort of simple things. Not if a truck goes from one farm to next, it's probably going to have to be washed. You better make darn sure your barn doesn't have a hole that a wild bird can get through. So what they call biosecurity is very important as well. People can't travel from barns to barn. And that's a lot of work and a lot of expense, and it will take time.
Yeah, well, look, you're putting a lot of this into perspective. Let me ask one final question on the bird flu topic. When you're talking about the export market with the vaccines, is there any kind of compromise possible there to make that easier to export or not?
Well, I would assume that if people, can trace the birds back to the farm, and the farm is vaccinated in a way that the rules and the regulations require, then I assume that most customers would be happy to take that meat. Better that, obviously, than the chance of bird flu being in the meat. So I will say this, I'd be real slow about it showing up in dairy herds as well. If milk is pasteurized, it's not a problem. I'd be a little slow about raw milk right at the present time.
That's good advice there. Well, Blake, listen, candidly, I don't know you very well, but you sound a little beaten down. I know it's been a rough day. We got to hope that some of this stuff works itself out, right?
Yeah, well, we're getting ready to spend the night with our greenhouses because we're supposed to have a 70-mile-an-hour wind by midnight. So not a great day.
Oh, yeah, that's another challenge. Well, God bless you. Thanks, Blake, for squeezing me in here today, okay?
Yeah, appreciate
All right,
it.
Well, see,
you.
I didn't even think about that, but that's a mess as well. Look, we had, I mean, earlier today, it was probably just like 30, 35 mile per hour winds, and they were really intense.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be a wind advisory in effect from 6 tomorrow morning to 6 p.m., up to 50 mile per hour gusts.
That's strong winds.
I know.
Those are the kind that are going to shake you around even when you're driving. Okay, I mentioned this earlier. I have a little time to do this right now. There's no doubt this is going to be one of those days where I don't get everything in that I want to, and there's a couple of pieces of audio that I still haven't gotten to, but I like Michael Rapaport as a comedian and as an actor. He's a guy that if you don't know him by name, you'd know his face.
You would.
Character yes. actor. He's been in a lot of different things. He's always been a bit of a regular on Howard Stern because he plays fantasy football with that gang over there. I've interviewed Michael before. I've met him here at KMOX when I was on that side when he comes in to do Funny Bone stuff. But he's Jewish, and he's been very active on social media and elsewhere on the topic of Israel. And something that I just found out here, I was about to read this because I want to read it, but you know how sometimes when you have something printed, the ads take over?
Yes.
I almost started to read this thing and I can't do it because Fred's version that was printed out has an ad over it. So let me get to this.
Because, I find that a lot with recipes online.
Yeah,
side note.
I don't like that, right?
Uh-uh.
Let's see. I spelled his name. Here
two
we go.
P's.
Here it is. Okay, I started. I tried to do it with two P's. That's not good. So here's his column. My message to my haters up north, and this is fascinating when you think about it, and the subheadline is, a Canadian politician is trying to bar me from the country where I'm scheduled to perform a few gigs. I'm offering her front row seats. I have to be careful here because Michael, not unlike the host, is very fond of profanity, and he may let some slip in this particular article, so my finger is on the dump button, so I don't have to dump myself. But he says this. He says, I've seen a lot of hate in the past 513 days. 2 months after Hamas's massacre, anti-Israel groups launched a social media campaign to discourage people from attending my show in Sacramento. So that was, you know, a couple years ago. And the reason was because he was very vocal on this particular issue. And he was really vocal when things started to get out of control on college campuses in particular. Anyway, just a little background. He goes, in January last year, my show in Portland, Oregon was protested too. 6 months after that, a Chicago venue canceled my act over, quote, safety concerns. And the day after, hooligans chased Jewish soccer fans through the streets of Amsterdam in November of 2024. Hundreds turned up to demonstrate against my gig in Lakeview, Illinois, a Chicago suburb heavily populated with Jews. And Michael says, I'm not alone. Many of my fellow Jewish performers are facing this kind of abuse right now simply because we support the existence of a Jewish state. This is really amazing to me. And I will admit a certain, well, maybe not even a certain amount, a high degree of naivete when it came and when it currently comes to the amount of anti-Semitism that is, like, they're not even trying to hide it. Right? It's one thing when stuff is in the shadows, but a lot of this stuff isn't even being hidden, which is, I think, even shocking and staggering to someone like me. So he says this, on Friday morning, I woke up to the craziest campaign against me ever. When I checked my social media feed, I saw that Heather McPherson, who is in the Canadian Parliament and a member of the New Democratic Party, was not just attacking me, but calling on her government to deny my entry into the country. Now, I'll pitch this little story, and maybe Joe knows about this. Joe Warmington's coming up here from the Toronto Sun, and we're going to talk about, you know, Trudeau and the tariffs and all that. But this is a fascinating story. So she posts on social media, new Democrats are alarmed that American personality Michael Rapaport is scheduled to perform in Canada. Rapaport, who has a significant criminal history, she said, also has a long history of racist and Islamophobic speech and of inciting violence and supporting terrorism. Her post goes on to say, we are witnessing an alarming increase in Islamophobia in Canada and globally. All Canadians deserve to feel safe in our communities. And in his piece, and this was in the Free Press, by the way, Rapaport said at the end, she once again urged Justin Trudeau's party to take action against me, saying new Democrats are calling on Liberal government to deny entry to Michael Rapaport. Let's just stop there for a second. Let's think about this. Because an American comedian actor believes in the existence of a Jewish state and has been pretty, you know, pointed on his position against, oh, what's it called, terrorism and the brutal slaughter of Jews. You have a member of Canadian Parliament that's encouraging her prime minister, big wussy that he is, Justin Trudeau, to not allow the dude into the entire country. That's what we're talking about.
Come
here.
On.
So Rappaport says, look, I've got no beef with Ms. McPherson. I've never met her or even heard of her, which is something I have in common with most people. But I guess what ticked her off is that I'm heading to Canada this week to perform 5 stand-up shows in Edmonton, Alberta's capital city, which McPherson represents. First, let's make a few things clear. I have no criminal history other than calling my ex-girlfriend Lily Taylor too many times back in 1997. He says, I'm not ashamed, I was in love. I have no outstanding warrants. I don't have any parking tickets. As far as racist Islamophobia, my only phobia currently is of radical jihadists. I'll admit, I have a phobia of anyone who wants to kill, hurt, or dehumanize Jews. The irony, he wrote, is that Ms. McPherson in her post asserted that hate has no place in Canada.
Ironic,
right? Except, of course, when hate is directed toward Jews, which Canada apparently has no problem with. That's what Rappaport wrote. Luckily, at least for now, it seems Trudeau and his party aren't listening. I'll be crossing the border this week. But he says the real issue is this. 59 hostages, both dead and alive, are still being held by Hamas in Gaza. Rather than call attention to that or to the horrific anti-Semitism sweeping her own country, this member of parliament is spending her capital making pleas to keep me out. A comedian, an American comedian, right? Rather than fixing whatever is going wrong in her own backyard. He says, this isn't the first time people have found me objectionable. Many take offense at my habit of saying the word F every 3 seconds. This is going to my point about profanity. And I've always spoken my mind. By the way, fair enough here, Michael Rappaport ain't no conservative. He's not a MAGA guy. He does not like Trump. So he has spoken out plenty, you know, for the Democrats. But on this issue, I think he's very consistent. He even says, you know, I've rallied in support of every cause. Black Lives Matter. I threw up in my mouth a little bit there. Women's rights, equal pay for women in Hollywood. The trendy things. The not trendy things. Everything under the sun. I'm a promiscuous rally goer, but I've never faced any pushback or threats of cancellation until I started defending Israel. He wrote, I don't look for trouble. I do, however, refuse to give in to bullies. That's why, since October 7th, I've called out people in Hollywood who have remained silent on this issue, who haven't had the moral backbone to denounce the moral depravity of those who stand on the side of terrorist regimes. It's why, at the 1-year anniversary of the invasion, I went to Israel, he wrote, to do 2 shows. I was very close to canceling them out of fear the moment was too heavy for laughter, but every single person I met there insisted I go ahead, and those shows were an honor to perform. And he said, although my show isn't entirely about being Jewish or October 7th, the best parts of my show, in my opinion, are. That's because comedy comes from real-life situations. I agree with him on that. And great comedy comes from pain and heartbreak, and I think that's true as well. Even so, I've often wondered, how could I stand up on stage and make people laugh in a moment as heavy as this one? Well, Michael Rappaport says Heather McPherson is how. Because he says, since that horrible day in Israel, I've never been prouder to be Jewish, and I'm only more motivated by cowards like her. Lately, he says, I've started wearing Teflon. It's a religious practice where you wrap a set of small black leather boxes that contain Torah verses to your body, which is meant to remind you of your ever-present existence of God. And he kind of goes on and he talks about some of the more anti-Semitic incidents that have happened in Canada. And he's saying, if you're reading this, Heather, I have a front row seat reserved for you and New Democrats, and that's a genuine offer. And I think we know what would happen with that genuine offer with someone like Heather McPherson, who's a member of parliament. She ain't going to take advantage of that. But that was a great column on the Free Press.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
By Michael Rappaport. And we may not agree on a lot of things related to politics, but on that one, 100%. Look, ladies and gentlemen, this show has correspondents all over the planet, and I'm so happy that we have one in Canada right now because they're calling it Tariff Tuesday up there, and it's pretty crazy. We're going to hear more about this tonight in the speech by President Trump, but Joe Warmington is our correspondent in Toronto with the Toronto Sun. Joe, you have no idea how excited I am to just get your perspective on all of this. How are you?
Well, I'm a hoser, eh? You know what? Patriotic. I don't know, but... Yeah, I don't think I've ever experienced a day like this. I mean, look at, I think a lot of us were comparing it to the pandemic day when I live in a big city, you know, Toronto's big like St. Louis, and, you know, there was no one downtown when they said the pandemic is on, everyone go home, and it was surreal. It was just like out of that movie Vanilla Sky when Tom Cruise is sort of in Times Square and there's no one there. Or like that Will Smith movie, you know, I Am Legend, like that. Now, this is a little bit different, but I never saw them taking American bourbon and Kentucky whiskey off the shelves. Usually when that's happening, there's a party or something, but usually they're stocking it up.
Yeah, you wrote about this. I want you to explain what's going on, because you said this might have been the biggest alcohol story to hit Canada and the U.S. since Prohibition, right?
Well, there's no question about it. It's a billion-dollar industry. Ontario is the biggest purchaser, according to the premier, and I've heard this before. It's a big province. I mean, it's 15 million people here, and, you know, many people love American wines, California wines, and American bourbons. They're great American products. I mean, obviously, whether it's Jim Beam or whether it's Jack Daniels or whether it's Maker's Mark or all the California wines. So, you know, they have some clout. I mean, all of those states are going to be affected by this. It's a big customer here in Ontario. President Trump, you know, he's treated Canada like a chump, like some sort of a derelict neighbor, as opposed to, you know, a long neighbor that's been your best friend, has your back. Anything you ever need from us, we're there, with the exception of the Iraq War, which, you know, everyone knows was probably the right call now.
Yeah, you know, at this point, you're probably right about that. Yes.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's a real kick in the head. I don't think anybody, I don't know. I mean, yes, our economy will collapse and we need America. There's no question about it. But I think there's damage here. I think there's a lot of hurt. I know I feel it. You know, I love President Trump, love America, obviously. We all do. We grew up with it. That's why all the comics are, you know, a lot of the great comics are from here, because they grew up watching American TV, and, you know, you kind of come at it from a different perspective. And, you know, I can go through from John Kennedy to Norm MacDonald to Jim Carrey to Mike Myers. It goes on and on and on. There's many more.
Well, you know what? We had a strong, I just want you to know this, we had a strong John Candy reference on our show earlier this afternoon. We were taking a look back at John Candy, and it's interesting that you mentioned him. But look, I want the listeners to know something about Joe. He's been a great correspondent over the years on a lot of these woke topics. And it's not like, because I think people are going to hear some of the criticism, and you're making this very personal, understandably so. You're not a guy that has TDS or anything like that, anything but that,
no.
Right, Joe? And I just want the audience to recognize that.
No, I mean, not at all. In fact, I was very proud of the president and the vice president for kicking Zelensky out of the office, out of the Oval Office on Friday. I've been to Ukraine. I've covered that story. I went there in 2014. You know, obviously, I love Ukraine and Ukrainian people, and I've also covered Zelensky here in Canada. Don't hate him. But he was out of line. He was way, way out of line. Telling the president about, you've washed it with this ocean. You got, you know, easy for you to say, man, I wouldn't have cared. Even Sleepy Joe would have woke up for that one. So he had that coming. As for this Canada thing, it's the stupidest thing President Trump has ever done. He won't win this. The thing about Canadians, people in St. Louis know enough about it from Wayne Gretzky on down. Canadians are very kind people, and, you know, obviously, we have this, we're smaller than the U.S., not by land mass or any of that, but we were on those beaches in Normandy. We were in World War One. We won Vimy Ridge. We beat, you know, we took that hill. There's nobody tougher than Canadians when you push them around. And every American who's ever run into a Canadian in any kind of a battle, whether it's hockey or whatever it is, they know that. President Trump is going to learn that. And so is that Lutnick guy, you know, Mr. Cry Wolf. It is, we're going to pull it. We're not going to have it. We're going to have it. All this stuff. They're going to find out. These are not the people. You don't mess with your biggest trading partner. And it's stupid. The whole thing is ridiculous. Now, if it's some sort of a chess piece, as some people, and I don't doubt it,
Right.
Whether this sends a message to China or to Taiwan or other places to say, we better just sign it 16% because look what he did to Canada. Then it's still evil because you're doing this to people here. You know, I'm a 60-year-old man. I've got a 12-year-old son. I started a little late. You know, $500,000 mortgage. I'm a Toronto guy. That's what a mortgage is when you started late. If this continues, my company will go bankrupt, most likely. You know, we'll lose our house, and we won't, you know, my son won't get to go to college. That's what's at stake here today. Sorry to have to...
No, look, Joe, personal. Look, I want the honesty. I know
the people are facing that.
Yeah. I value your perspective more so because I know how active you've been on so many of these other issues, and I've appreciated that. And let me get you one response, because one thing that people should know, you're no fan of Trudeau, but here's what he said today.
What he wants is to see a total collapse of the Canadian economy, because that'll make it easier to annex us, is the second half of his thought. Now, first of all, that's never going to happen. We will never be the 51st state. But yeah, he can do damage to the Canadian economy, and he's started this morning. But he is rapidly going to find out, as American families are going to find out, that that's going to hurt people on both sides of the border.
So Trudeau says that Trump's goal here is to annex Canada. What do you think about that? And I guess the follow-up would be, do you see this as more just a vindictiveness on Trump's part because he hates Trudeau?
Well, I think it's all of the above, but you know, you can't go into an airport and say something. You know, certain things you can't say. And Trump has said it over and over and over about the 51st state. At first, people thought it was a joke. I knew he wasn't joking. He can covet us and he can want us. I mean, he doesn't want Canada. Believe me, it's as woke and liberal as anywhere else. He wants Alberta, Saskatchewan, and perhaps Manitoba, where the Hudson's Bay Churchill port is, and that will take him straight to Greenland. He wants that. And before the Panama Canal was built, that shipping season up, that northern shipping season was huge. Plus, the Arctic is really big for Russia, rare earth minerals. Remember who's in his ear is Elon Trump, or Elon Musk, sorry.
Musk, right.
And the Freudian slip there. But it's like, look, when Prime Minister Trudeau is sounding good to Canadians, conservative Canadians, you know you got problems. Look, Trump's going to back down on this at some point. Either he'll do it tonight or tomorrow, or he'll learn the hard way. Because everything that Canada has, from lumber to steel to nickel to potash to oil, and there's a lot of other things, Americans need. Everything's integrated, including the auto industry. I understand why President Trump wants to deliver jobs to those swing states, because he won all seven of them, and he's got to get those jobs. But who's going to buy the F-150 trucks? You're not going to buy them over there in Seoul, South Korea, or in Japan. You know where they buy them? They buy the Ram truck, they buy the Ford F-150, and they buy the Chevy Colorado, all those trucks right here in Canada, buy the truckload. I mean, everybody I know either has one or wants one. I want one. I can't afford it. But the reality of it is they're not going to buy them here anymore. If we're not going to be a part of making them, you know, that sort of U.S.-Mexico deal, where do you think they're going to, you know, who's going to buy them? So it's a stupid move. And you know, we'll see what happens. And you know, you can be bigger and tougher and even smarter and still lose, and you're going to lose this one. And so, you know, anybody listening, you know, I do very much respect President Trump. I've met him. I've had good rapport with him. I like all the cabinet. I think they're doing a really outstanding job, but this is foolhardy and it really should stop. And you just don't do it on the point of your neighbor. There's no reason to do this. Trudeau's leaving like in 4 days. We're going to have a new prime minister in 4 days. So maybe that's when President Trump will drop this.
Well, look, here's just for some perspective, Joe, and for the audience that didn't listen earlier, I've had two guests on this hour who are normally all in on Trump. Blake Hurst, who's a farmer here in Missouri, and he was I could hear it in his voice. He's worn out. It's been a tough day for him. We got high winds moving in, so that makes it even tougher. But he was talking about how the prices are going up, you know, for what he gets from Canada, potting soil and beyond. And you, the supporter of President Trump, no fan of Pierre Trudeau, you know, kind of being honest about this. And I appreciate your honesty. I've got issues with the tariffs. I'm not an expert on this, but a lot of the American people, I think, maybe view it this way, and I hope that it's this way. We see this more as a negotiating tool, and I think a lot of people hope that this is going to work out. But I know that there are real consequences on the line here, Joe, and I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, you know what? The reality of it is that I guess Canada has benefited because, I know that Canada has been, we've taken it for granted, and we feel entitled to that market because we're right next door, and we feel like we're family. You know, we might have a disagreement here or there. There's obviously a liberal-conservative divide, things like that, and all that. But never have we ever had an American president do what President Trump has done this, not just today, but the last, you know, couple months since he started floating this thing. But in addition to that, I think that, I mean, it does hurt a little bit. You know, my son, he wore, I wrote about the shirts that they're selling and the hats and that. I bought my son a hat. Canada's not for sale, and he wore it to school. He's actually wearing it in his jam session over at the music shop here, which we'll have to cancel if we lose our job. That's $4,000 a year to have them piano and guitar here. So they're messing with our life here. And you could say, well, you know what? You don't get our market. You don't get, but the reality of it is that a lot of the, you know, U.S. manufacturing, whatever's left of it, is from the byproducts of Canadian minerals, Canadian water, Canadian lumber, Canadian steel, all these things. These are real things. This isn't just like, oh, we're better than you, and we're bigger than you, and we're smarter than you, and you guys are a bunch of dummies. I mean, anybody that talks like that, you never have success. But I'll just say this, and it's not ruining my respect or whatever for the Trump administration, not at all. We'll work it out. He can say what he wants to say. But I just say this, when you're messing with Canadians and you're down, it's the wrong people. You will see that. This is a strong group of people here. This is a northern place. This is a tough, tough place, just like Russia is a tough place. You don't win wars in Russia, and you don't win wars in Canada. Americans didn't win that war in 1812, and there's a reason for that. It's because this is a tough, tough group of people. Now, so is President Trump. But no one is tougher than a Canadian when the Canadian has to stand on guard for the, you wait and see what'll happen. Remember, I said it on your show, you'll have me back when this is won by Canada. It will be won by Canada in the end, and it will be tail between the legs for President Trump. Hopefully it won't destroy his presidency, because that's what I was going to say when I started to talk like this. That's what hurts probably as much as the rest of it, is that I want President Trump to succeed. And, you know, when somebody's going down and you see a beat manhole cover that's, you know, not you know that you're going to fall through it, and you can't yell and say, hey, listen, don't step there. That's what I'm trying to say right now. And there's a lot of people listening now that know exactly what I'm talking about. This is a horrible, horrible, horrible mistake.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree with you. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to get you on here today, Joe. Thank you so much. Hang in there. All right.
Well, let's go back. Have me back sometime when things are more positive, because, you know, I like talking to you, and Mark is great, you know, to talk to you. But hopefully we'll have better time,
We'll have better times, and we can at least close this conversation with commonality and joy that Justin Trudeau is leaving finally, right? We can agree on that.
You know what? Maybe because of this, he won't be leaving. We'll believe that when we see it.
We don't want that. Well, that would definitely turn the table down here. Hey, Joe, thank you so much. It's awesome. Hang in there.
I hope your Congress isn't serious about letting men play in women's sports or whatever that is. That's the real story. What
Tell
the
me
heck
about
is
it.
That?
Insanity. They're pretty good at insanity in Washington. Joe Warmington from the Toronto Sun. Appreciate it. Well, I think it's going to be an interesting speech tonight. And, you know, what we heard from Joe Warmington there up in Toronto at the Toronto Sun was very personal. And this is personal to a lot of people. And you heard it from Blake Hurst earlier this hour as well. I would be still in the camp, and maybe we'll be proven wrong on this, that would allow for some time to work this stuff out. Because I can't imagine that the goal of the administration is to inflict pain on certainly the American farmers and people across the country. There's maybe some difficulty going on right now. This trade stuff is very complicated. Right. You know, I had somebody that told me, yeah, this is all about fentanyl and, you know, immigration. Well, I think some of it is, certainly when it is pointed toward Mexico, and I get that there's a fentanyl issue from Canada as well, but we don't have Canadians that are, you know, trying to climb walls and get over to this country. So I do think there's a difference between the leverage that you would use with Canada versus Mexico, but I'm not the guy in charge right now, so let's do this right now.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
A couple here, but the first one is J.D. Vance talking about all this. You're going to hear from the president tonight, 8 o'clock. We're going to air it live on 97.1 FM Talk.
Look, the president's going to have conversations with the Canadians. We need to see real engagement on the fentanyl issue, on the drug issue. That is fundamentally the underlying element of these tariffs, is we think the Canadians have not been serious about stopping the drug trade. Now, people will sometimes say, well, if you look at the numbers, the Mexicans send way more fentanyl into the United States than the Canadians do. The Canadians have allowed a lot of fentanyl to come into the country. It's not a defense to say more has come from Mexico, because way too much has come from Mexico, too.
All right. Well, I might challenge that a little bit, but we're going to hear more about it in the speech tonight. And then I'm kind of waiting for this. This is crazy. This is this literally called a DEI committee in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And they're talking about their Pride celebration, which will take place, of course, during the month of June. And they're doing a little intro here to this in this meeting. And this was last week. This was on February 25th.
We are proud to help make Oshkosh an even more welcoming community, or more welcoming city.
Hang on. I aired it out of order. Here's the first one here. Sorry.
This annual event is called Oshkosh Pride. However, that is not the only thing that we do, but it is one of the important things that we do. At this annual event in June, we celebrate and uplift LGBTQIA2S+ people at all of their intersections, while also aiming to improve the mental health outcomes of LGBTQIA2S+ people in Oshkosh, as well as throughout Winnebago County.
Okay, first thing, this is in Wisconsin, Winnebago County, Wisconsin. Did you catch all the Alphabet Mafia stuff there?
Oh, yeah.
What in the hell is she talking about? But this is the money cut here. So they roll out the plans for Pride, you know, in June, and then this guy speaks up.
I don't have a comment, but a comment. I have been there for several years, and they're absolutely amazing events. Mm-hmm. I know last year it was a waiting line to even get in. Like, it was really well attended. Couldn't ask for a bit more beautiful day, and I'm expecting wonderful days this summer as well.
It sounds beautiful, but wait
really
till you hear this woman.
My, at the time, 3-year-old had such a good time tipping the drag queens and the other drag performers. He kept going, so pretty, and like holding out the dollars. He was so excited. So I'm sure that he won't be able to wait again this year. So thank you so much for making it not just a fun event, but a fun event for everyone in your family.
Uh-huh. Did you hear what she said? My 3-year-old had fun tipping the drag queens. What? And the hell is wrong with some of these people in this country? See, 90% of the people in this country are against that crap. Enjoy the speech tonight.
Get more at 971talk.com.